Good morning, everyone. My name is Vicki Engel, and I am an alcoholic. And it's my great privilege and honor to be chairing this morning's meeting and sharing this time with you. I have a couple of housekeeping things, but first, let's start with a moment of silence and gratitude for our recovery. Thank you. Before I start, is Butch in the house? Does anybody know him? Okay, there may be a slight change to the program in that case. Okay, I'd like to start this morning's meeting, since it is called Joy of Helping Others, with a short reading from Chapter 7, Working with Others. And it reads, practical experience shows that nothing will so much ensure immunity, from drinking as intensive work with other alcoholics. It works when other activities fail. This is our 12th suggestion. Carry this message to other alcoholics. You can help when no one else can. You can secure their confidence when others fail. Remember, they are very ill. Life will take on new meaning to watch people recover, to see them help others, to watch loneliness vanish, to see a fellowship grow up about you, to have a host of friends. This is an experience you must not miss. We know you'll not want to miss it. Frequent contact with newcomers and with each other is the bright spot of our lives. As I said, unless Butch has come into the room, has Butch from Tennessee arrived? Okay, then we will change the order of things a bit, and we will give our speakers a little bit more time than they had originally been allotted. And so, therefore, Kevin from London, England, will start our meeting off this morning. Please welcome Kevin.
Come on, Butch, where are you? I need your help. My name is Kevin. I am an alcoholic. I'm from London, England. I've got the best home group there is in the whole world. And I know that because there are members from that home group in this audience to support me. I was 16 years as a barman in London. I worked in 42 pubs. And I did have the keys to the kingdom. I had the keys to the cellar. And every time I got the sack, or I thought I was going to get the sack, I went home to Mum. And I caused havoc in the house. And I mean havoc. But on the 5th of July, 1983, my mum and dad chucked me out of the house. I had no friends, no respect, no love, no dignity. And the result of that, I lived in the woods for one night. I was crying. And my miracle happened on that day. I walked down Shooter's Hill, which is in South East London, and I walked into the detox unit of the army. God's got a wonderful sense of humour. And this man looked at me and knew exactly what was wrong, because he had a whole hospital full of alcoholics from the army. He said, give us your mum and dad's telephone number. You know that word, pride? No. And the result of that was, he got me telephone number with my mum and dad. Because I told my dad exactly how I felt about him, which was wrong, because my father was a regimental sergeant major in the army and a PT instructor. And I was 16 years of lard. And he got the telephone number. And Mum and Dad came down, and I saw the look on my father's face. And you know that? You bend over and you think, what have I done? What I've done, I've ruined their lives. I stole from them, I stole from my brother, I stole from every pub that I worked in. Just a little bit of identification. And I saw where my mum had been crying as a result of me. When you talk about humility, the humility was, oh, I didn't care. They're just my mum and dad. They're responsible for me at 34 years of age. No. With that, I don't know if the nurse who was the person working in the army said something to my mother, because all my life they told me I've got to stop drinking. And you know what alcoholics do? They do the opposite. They drink. They said, if you stop drinking, they reverted it back to me. If you stop drinking, we'll help you. I thought, where did that come from? And from that day to this day, the next day, it was the 7th of the 7th, 1983. And I came into this fellowship on that day. I heard a Scottish man, it's called Peter, at my very first meeting. He said, on a daily basis, you don't pick up the drink, you go to lots of meetings. His experience was, he'd had 135 meetings in 90 days. I thought, flash. So I'd had 137 meetings in 90 days. Just to outdo the Scottish. We like doing that in London. I went to my second meeting, which was Lewisham, on a Friday night. Now you may think the joy of helping others, the way I got about this, is what is he talking about? I met a friend there called Trevor. He had 9 months. I thought, how'd you get 9 months? He said, you don't drink, you go to meetings. And that's what I did. When I came into Alcoholics Anonymous, I could hardly read and hardly write. Found out I was dyslexic as well. And after a year, this is the clever alcoholic, this is. After a year, he said, you can go to the telephone office in central London. And you can help alcoholics. I thought, oh, wonderful. You know, the ego. I've only got a little ego. I tell lies as well. This lady, Irish, short. Her name was Mari. Now, I was supposed to write down all the information of alcoholics when you phone up when you're drunk. And guess what? I couldn't do it. And she said, Kevin, one day you're going to help someone to help you to read and write. And I thought, I'll shut over. I asked her to help me read and write. Bottom line, she did. Alcoholics are very clever. Devious. I remember somebody saying that, so anything I'll say is by other people who was here before me. She said, if I teach you to read and write, well, she's not going to help me. You've got to do something for me. Well, here we go. She says, I live in Chelsea. In Chelsea, they have quite large houses. And they have quite large windows. Lots of them. Guess what I had to do? I had to clean the windows. She gave me the precious gift of this sobriety. Love and service. I became the team maker at Shooters Hill on a Monday night when I first came out of 3 months. My Scottish friend, who's got a big wooden spoon, said my tea was rubbish. I went back to improve my tea. Guess what? I'm still here. Didn't do any work for quite a long time. I just went to meetings, and that lady at the telephone office, she said, "Kevin, you can now read and write. Do you know what this means? W-O-R-K. I thought, "Thank you. Love you too." I had to get out of self. I had to get out of my head. When you listen about Bill Wilson and Dr. Bob, the ego of Bill Wilson needed Dr. Bob. I'm not going to put myself in the same light as Bill Wilson, but I am an example of him. And the result was, I wanted you to like me, so I did every job there was. Please like me, please like me. I had to like myself inside first. Through these steps. After 2.5 years, I went up that Shooter's Hill again. I went to a meeting on Saturday night, and there was a man there that I trusted implicitly inside. He took me home one day, and for about a month, I was thinking, I want him as a sponsor, and I never had the courage to ask him. And he took me home, he said, "Is there a question you want to ask me, Kevin?" I thought, "How does he know?" It's probably coming out of every pore in my body. And I said, "Will you please be my sponsor?" Guess what he was? A bloody journalist, so he could read and write. And he sat me down in his car, and he said, "Go home and ask yourself why you want me as a sponsor." The moment I asked him, he asked me. Gratitude I owe that man. Because when I did the first three, I can't, God could, if I asked. I wasn't an atheist, I didn't believe in anything. With that, when I did my fourth, wrote it down, and then did my fifth, the woods that I was in, came over Shooter's Hill, went down the other side, and there was the woods on the left-hand side that I ended up in. On the right-hand side was an AA meeting where I made the team. There was the decision, straight down the middle of this road. I'm still here. I'm not going to go into what it was like drinking, you all know. I'm shaking, I'm nervous. If I cry, you won't care, and I know that. Because I know the love of this fellowship that's supporting me throughout. There's various things that's gone through my mind, but I'm going to tell you what happened to my friend Trevor, and this is not to hurt a dear friend of mine. This is the experience, the joy of helping others. Trevor and I went everywhere. People knew us all over the country. We go to a very special place in Dumfries, it's called the Blue Bonnets Gathering, and we went there in 1984. We've been there every year except for one. He missed one, I missed one. You will make lifelong friends where you'll be bound to and will renew your wonderful ties. You will escape disasters together, and you know what it means to give of yourself so others may rediscover life. That was our experience. But in 1999, Trevor didn't go to meetings. And after a while, he had a stroke. He added the alcohol. Then he had a brain hemorrhage. Then he got pneumonia and he died. A year before that, I went to help Trevor to pass on this message. We're dealing with the most awful illness there is on this earth. I don't take it lightly. That's why I'm here, to pass on my message, not yours, mine. The result of that is, the year before that, this lady was with her son, had a husband who had Alzheimer's and a son who was drinking. I went to help Trevor, and this lady was in the house, and she, this is not to put her down, she was in a mess, and she knows that. Result of that is, we went to help Trevor, and Trevor didn't want help. He was drunk, and I cried my eyes out when I walked away from him. But I said to this lady, what are you doing? You can't give it to the alcoholic, give it to the family. We took her to her first Al-Anon meeting on a Monday night. The next day she phoned Al-Anon. She's been in that fellowship ever since. She's known me 22 years the next week. And I respect and love that woman. Result of that is, she went into Al-Anon. She used to phone me up. She's pest one and I'm pest two. But I had to tell that lady, who I love, I'm in grief as well. She went, oh God, I didn't upset you. I said, no. You need to go to your fellowship and I need to go to mine. She did. She's very young. She was only 83 then. No, 80, I'm wrong, I can't remember. I know how old she is now. She actually went into her fellowship, and I took her to a place that year called the Blue Bonnets in 91. She's not looked back, the joy of helping others. We supported one another, literally. And about nearly 3 years ago, I was living by myself in an area where I was selling drugs, and I got beaten up. I said to this lady on a Friday night, there's a question I want to ask you. She said, I know the question, and yes, you can live here. So we've moved in together. She's my second mum. My mum and dad died since I've been in this fellowship. They're the people I hated. But I was the one who done their funeral. In dignity. The people I hurt. Now, here comes the joy. 3 years ago, people know me. I don't talk about what I'm going to do. Never have done, never will do. This is my, well, it should have been my fault. I've got a lot of people went over to Minneapolis. I couldn't go because I had a fiancée, which we parted. At the time she got cancer and she put me on the shelf, which I didn't like. I had to pray for her. Couldn't go there. My friends all went to Minneapolis. They phoned me up. They said, Kevin, it's wonderful here. Everything's worked out perfectly and you're not here. Oh, God. 3 years ago, I came here and booked 25 rooms. I've ended up with 74. I was responsible for about 180 people from the UK to this country. My friends said, some of them, have you taken step two yet? When you take on something like that, it's a lot of responsibility. Guess who's been supporting me? Trevor's mum. She's my secretary as well. When I came here, I couldn't read, couldn't write, dyslexic, alcoholic. They told me to come into the, there's a gentleman in here told me to come into the 21st century and get a computer. He's in this room. I work in security in a residential block of flats in Westminster, very posh. And this man came in and he said, I said, what's that? Is that a new TV? He said, no, it's a new computer. I said, what are you doing with the Apple one? So he gave me a laptop. God almighty. There you go, there's a laptop. So then I had to get a printer. And I've got a printer for 40 quid. And I've been sending emails absolutely everywhere. When I came here, couldn't read, couldn't write, dyslexic. What I've put together is a trip. We came out, about 60 of us, last Saturday. We stayed in a hotel called the Metropolitan. We're there until Monday. We pick up 30 minivans on Monday. We're going to go to Niagara Falls to celebrate the 4th of July. To any Americans, happy 4th of July. And any Canadians, happy 1st of July. I am a people pleaser. And then on Monday, when we go and watch the fireworks, we go to this place that Bill Wilson and Dr. Bob started this fellowship. We've done 3 days in Accra. To show these people what this fellowship, not what they think it is, but what it really is. And then we come back here. But the joy of what I thought, Sunday night, there's nothing on. What can we do? Or what can I do with the support of this fellowship? Being English, or British, or whatever you want to call it, we are a sailing nation. If you go down to the front, there's a huge big yacht. There's about 150-foot schooner. I thought, well, let's hire it. And we have. So far, we've got about 180 people going on the yacht on Sunday evening. And here's the sales pitch. It takes $2.25, so anybody wants any tickets, come and see me afterwards. The joy of helping others, that's the thing. I am responsible when anyone, anywhere, reaches out for help, I want the hand of AA, always. Not like, I think I'll do it. Always to be there. That's what you teach me. There were 3 people I had on my hit list when I came in. The one was the lady at the telephone office. Another one is a Scottish man who told me my tea was rubbish. And the other one, I didn't like it. He used to wind me up rotten. I hated his guts. It's called resentment. And the result of that was, guess what? My actual sponsor died as a result of cancer. I got the man, the third on my list, to be my sponsor. I love the man. In the last week, that lady and I've been taking resentments 14 times for that lady. This is a private joke. Jesse, this is payback time. I want you to meet the lady I love and respect. Stand up. That's the resentment gone. She's now got she's got one for me now. Big one. There are members in here who know. Don't talk about gratitude. Bill needed Bob. Bob needed the man in the bed. and then they pass it on to us. I've had people from this room who've come over to my country at a Blue Bonnets gathering. There are people I love and respect. Say I am grateful to be here amongst you. I phoned up a member of the board, the chairman of the committee that's put this together. I phoned him up quite a few times. He's passed me on lots of information. And I said, I can't thank you enough, because he put that together last night. And he was like, phew. And he said, there is one way of you paying me back, Kevin. You're speaking. I thought, thank you very much. I came in here and he's like, oh my God, what have I let myself in for? I'd just like to say thank you.
Thank you, Kevin. Is Butcher in the house yet? Our next speaker comes from North Hollywood in California, Teresa.
My name's Teresa. I'm an alcoholic. From Hawaii. Isn't that beautiful? I just feel like all I'm going to do is just break down and cry, actually. What a perfect topic. I want to thank the committee for asking me to come out and speak. I'm so nervous. What else is new? And that's a good thing. I always say I never want to stop being nervous because it keeps me humble. And lets me know that God's running the show and not me. And that Teresa ain't about, you know, I'm not about to do this. God's moving me out of the way. Oh, boy. I'm on overload. I'm on emotional, full love overload. This is my first convention. Oh, man. When they asked me to come out and speak, I was like, oh, goodness. That's pretty huge. And I had never come before, and so I went through a lot of changes to get here, and I'm just so blessed to be here. I am truly a miracle. And I was sitting here, I kept goofing with some of the people from Hawaii, telling them, I don't know what to talk about on this topic. Why did they pick this for me? And I guess I'm really emotional because I'm thinking about what it was like. And I am such a miracle. You know, I always start off by saying not only am I an alcoholic, I'm an adult child of an alcoholic, I'm an Al-Anon, I'm an incest survivor, I'm a codependent, I'm a workaholic, I got a whole lot of problems. And I was just so selfish, arrogant, egotistical little girl. You know, I had checked out of my body a long time ago, and I really am born addicted. My mother drank, and she didn't want me to be born, and I was born addicted, and I drank every day, all day. My whole life was about drinking, and it was about drinking and disrespecting you and disrespecting me, and I had no self-esteem and no self-worth, and I didn't know how to love anybody, let alone love myself. Talk about selfishness. I was so greedy. Everything was about me. I held people hostage. I used you. I manipulated you. I abused you. You know, I always try to figure out how I can get what I need to get. And there was always a hidden motive and a hidden intention. And if I wasn't going to gain anything out of this, I wasn't going to do it. And I knew I always had to be the one to win, regardless whether you lost and regardless whether you were hurt, it never mattered to me. I didn't know any other life other than that. Everyone in my family are alcoholics and addicts. Everyone has died from this disease. I was telling someone the other day that my, you know, good description of my family is when my aunt died in Puerto Rico. She didn't look right without a Budweiser can in her hand. And so we put one in there. And then she looked okay. And none of us thought anything was wrong with that. And we were like, that's Fifi. She looks good now. There she goes. And we really felt she smiled after that. But she wasn't smiling. And we buried her with a Budweiser can. Could you imagine? Most of us, if we would have kept drinking, we would have died like that too, you know? And so when I think about my life, when I think about what a miracle I am, that when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous 15 years ago, I was 25 years old and just so self-obsessed and selfish and self-centered, and I was a mess, and I crawled into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous because this program is based on attraction rather than promotion. I had a mother in recovery. I had a cousin in recovery. And I used to come to these meetings, and we talk about the joy of helping others, of not truly understanding the attraction and how significant it is. In these rooms and outside of these rooms. I used to come to visit to California. I lived, born and raised in New York City. And I would go to visit from California. And when I would go visit, I would go to the meetings. And I would go to the dances and the musician picnics and all the events, the AA events. And I was drinking. I was drinking before the meeting, during the meeting, and after the meeting. But when I was sick and tired of being sick and tired of being sick and tired, I remembered those faces. I never knew that the seed was being planted. I really didn't. I remember talking about you, making fun of you, but I didn't realize that when I was ready, that's all I saw was the faces of the people in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I saw their smiles, and I saw their gleam, and I saw that no one ever shunned me or looked down on me or shook their head at me. And so I came here, even though I came full of shame, I felt so dirty and so empty, I just couldn't go another day. I heard an old-timer say demoralization is a whole lot of things, but when you can't get drunk and you can't get sober, it's really bad. And that's how I was. And I had nowhere else to go. And I came to the very people that I knew where they were smiling and they were laughing and they seemed to be okay with me even though I was dirty and filthy and nasty. And I crawled into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. I came on a Greyhound bus all the way from New York to California. I thought everybody in California was sober. That's all I thought. Look, California was a sober place. That's what I thought. And I detoxed on that bus. I sweated on that bus and I shook on that bus. I was wearing a size 1 pair of pants with 2 pants underneath. I was 4 months pregnant with a dead baby in my belly. I didn't know it at the time. I was on my 4th child. My womb was so polluted. I had lost so many children, and I was just looking pitiful. And I came into the room, and still with an attitude, I said, don't look at my outfit. I'm kind of going through a crisis. So vain and superficial. And it was all of you who had come before me that had taught me what it was to help somebody else. I sat in the back of the room, and I didn't want to stand up as a newcomer, and there was a woman taking a cake, and Marcy, she's passed on now from Crenshaw Lano, and she helped so many newcomers. That woman was an attraction and a role model to me because she helped everyone who walked in that door, no matter how you looked, no matter what you had on. And she left from the podium, and she walked to the back of the room, and she said, girl, you will stand up and state your name and your disease. And that was my introduction to Alcoholics Anonymous. My mother dropped me off there, and I always feel like a baby in a baby basket. My mother dropped me off in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous to the very people who had saved her life, and she left me. And all the old-timers, all the people who have been there just cradled me. And they told me to sit down, shut up and listen, take the cotton out of my ears, put it in my mouth, because my best thinking got me there. And they sat me in the front. They taught me how to sweep the floor and empty the ashtrays and fold the chairs and extend my hand and to make coffee. And that was all I was allowed to do, actually. I got sober in Crenshaw Lano in 9604, and they were pretty tough. They didn't let me share for a whole year. Jay likes this one. Anytime I had something to say or raise my hand, they go, what do you got to talk about? All you know is what it was like. Sit down somewhere. That's what they would tell me. Podium is sacred. You share your experience, strength, and hope. and they taught me how to dress, because you see, all I knew was I was physically abused, emotionally abused, sexually abused, and I never owned my body, and all I knew was that's the only way to get you to love me, whether you were beating me or molesting me. And so I didn't know any better, and I came into Alcoholics Anonymous for you to teach me how to be a lady. And I remember walking in the room half naked with fishnet stockings and spandex skirt and bustier and big old high heel shoes with rhinestones and prancing in the meeting, boy, just trying to get some attention because that's the only way I knew how. And the old timers say, look like somebody got some issues. Where are your clothes at, girl? What you came up in here looking for? I'll put some clothes on and I would have to run home and get dressed. You taught me how to dress. And I was kidnapped. And you would say, come with me and go here and go there. And I would just follow. I had nowhere else to go. And as a result of that, You know, it was the little things that I was taught. It was the little things about going to the podium and reading. I always share this because I would come up and want to study, you know, this chapter so that when you ask me to read, I can recite it and know it by memory. And I would be so excited and they'd say, okay, Teresa, you know, you can read. And I'd come up like, ooh, okay, I've been working on this for a while. And I would start reading, you know, with my head up and they'll go, excuse me, we didn't say recite, we said read. Those things were so significant because I learned how to follow direction. I learned how to sit down in that chair and pay attention to what was going on up here and not worry about who was going to the bathroom and who was walking around and who was coming in and out of the room. They told me to listen like the dying only could. They gave me the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous and told me that it was unity, recovery, and service, that I had a disease of a threefold nature and I needed to do all three to treat my disease. Man, I've taken this program literal. I know that they talk about in the 12 and 12 that's so important. It talks about, not even that in our big book, about how to be of service. But I first needed to get rid of selfishness before I can be of service. See, before I can even be able to help you, I had to clean house. I didn't know how to help you when I came here. I knew how to use you. I knew how to take advantage of you. I knew how to manipulate you. But I didn't know how to help anybody until you helped me first. I heard you say, let us love you so you can learn to love yourself. And you loved me. You spoon-fed me. You taught me. You gave me these 12 steps and these 12 traditions. You know, the 12 traditions to me are like huge. They really taught me how to be in unity with others. Because I never knew how to do that, ever. Either you were above me or you were beneath me. I didn't know how to be a part of a team. And the 12 traditions taught me that. The 12 steps helped me to go within and to look at me and to understand that I was blocked from the sunlight of the Spirit. And that I couldn't let God come into this heart and into this body unless I got rid of the junk, the toxic, nasty stuff that just hung out inside my soul. I had to get down to the causes and conditions of my drinking. Drinking is only but a symptom. And when I did that, things started changing for me. I literally started doing stuff for you, but I wasn't looking for anything back. I just started suiting up and showing up. And I did the footwork. And when someone asked me to show up and have a commitment, I did it. I didn't do it any hidden motive. I didn't need hidden agenda. I just showed up and I just did it. And this thing called getting rid of selfishness started kicking in. This thing called unconditional love started happening to me, and it's as a result of the 12 steps. And I was just amazed. I always say, I am baffled that I can handle situations that used to baffle me. That blows me away every time. And I just started doing things for others. And I enjoy being a secretary and a treasurer and a coffee person and a cake person. You know, and at some level, all I've ever wanted in my life was to be loved, really. All I wanted was somebody to love me. Jeez. And I didn't know that all I had to do was take the eyes off of myself and put them on others, and I would receive an abundant amount of love. Talk about the joy of helping others. My life is just so full because I just show up for people. I just do what's in front of me, and I go wherever God will have me go. You know, I say I met my higher power in my 5th year of sobriety, butt naked, alone with a white flag up my ass. It was extremely painful. Pain? Talk about surrender. That was like beyond surrender. That's when Teresa stopped running the show. And I haven't been confused since who's doing it. And I realized that whatever it is that I want to do doesn't usually work out. And so I go, okay, God, what are we doing today? I mean, it's down to the simplest thing. If I want to go shopping at the mall, I just want to go shopping to buy myself something. I never get there. I end up doing, somebody calls me for this, or somebody calls me for that, or we end up doing that. I never get to the mall. But the strangest thing is then somebody comes and say, I wanted a blouse, and I just wanted to go to the mall to get a blouse. But a phone call or a sponsee or somebody in the program, or they want me to show up and speak somewhere, or they need somebody to do a 12-step call, and I just go and I do it instead. I don't say, no, I want to go. I was going to the mall. I go, okay, forget about the blouse. Let's go over here. And then they do that, and then next thing you know, somebody turns around and they give me a blouse. Those things are huge. That's a lesson. I end up getting that blouse anyway. The gift that I have received in Alcoholics Anonymous is huge. You know, I was like, geez, today I don't have any hidden motives of being of service and helping anybody. You know, I was at a convention recently and I could bring my partner with me and she couldn't come, and so I bought my sponsee. And there was someone there and they were like, oh, is that your partner? And I was like, no. They were like, oh, because you just seem like you love each other so much. I was like, well, that's my sponsee. I love her as you love me. I can only do what you gave me. I can only give back what you so freely gave to me. I mimic that. You know, I always say in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, the women, you have shown me what a mother looks like, what a sister looks like, what a cousin, what an aunt, what a friend. You are my reflection. You are my mirror. I dance with you. All the women in the room are my mirrors, and I learned from you. And then all the men, you taught me what a father looks like, what a brother looks like, what an uncle looks like. Alcoholics Anonymous is my family. I am a baby of Alcoholics Anonymous. I grew up literally in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm about 15 years old emotionally. I came in here emotionally an infant. And so I watch you. I watch how you help other people. I watch how you didn't make a big deal when somebody would come in pushing a cart, smelling funky, and you would tell them to keep coming back. Would you like some coffee? Would you like some donuts? I learned that from you, how to do that and how to hug them anyway. If I would have seen different, maybe I would have did different. But I saw that, and that taught me not to judge other people, to extend my hand wherever possible. Nobody ever shunned me or pushed me away. I learned that when I'm out in the street, I say hello to everybody and I smile. And then I get to be an attraction of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I have so much joy just emanating the beauty of the sunlight of the Spirit that God has blessed me with. In this room and outside of this room, wherever I go, I want to represent Alcoholics Anonymous to show that this program works. And I put my hand out wherever I can, that I am a trusted servant, that God is my employer. When I show up to work, you've helped me to become an employee. You've helped me to become a daughter, a sister, an aunt. You know, today my mother has the beginnings of Alzheimer's, and my dad has emphysema and Parkinson's, and you taught me how to show up for them. And when mommy can't remember to have patience and compassion and tolerance, the principles of Alcoholics Anonymous, and not be so selfish and want mommy to be there for me, because that's my mommy. Listen to me, mommy. Pay attention to me. Come on, daddy. Stop shaking. Why are you doing that, daddy? And I get to have compassion. I go, how can I help you today, daddy? What do you need? Are you hungry? Alcoholics Anonymous taught me that, and I feel good because you see them smile and you see that, you know, they're just so happy. And when mommy's all over the place, I could just go, okay, what is it that you need? And let me think about them. Let me think about what they're going through and their illness and how much of a challenge it is for them. Let me see them in beauty and light and spirit. Alcoholics Anonymous taught me that. And I'm not looking for anything back. And the other thing that I've noticed is, you know, telling somebody, this is like amazing to me. You know, I've been speaking in so many places. And when I get done, people stand online and they give me these hugs or these tears are coming from their eyes. Or they're smiling from ear to ear and they get this other level of hope. They get another moment of hope. And I see God. It's not like I see old Teresa got it going on. I get emotional because I'm like, wow, look at God using me as a vessel and a conduit to carry the message of hope. And God is awesome. A drunk like me giving you hope when I'm usually trying to rip you off. That's what I know how to do. And so I would say I see God in that. And I'm like, wow, that is so beautiful. The tears that fall from your eyes or what you feel, you know, that light shining in your heart, that's God. That's like so, I get joy out of that. I get joy out of seeing God's work. I listen to Bill and I listen to Dr. Bob saying, don't ever get complacent and always be of service. I got an opportunity to go to Dr. Bob's house. I sat in there and just cried. It was because of their selflessness that allowed me to be here today. And how all the struggles and the changes that they went through in the beginning, and look at what we have today. This is just so awesome. I'm on overload. There's so many people here who, yes, at some level I have touched your life, but there's so much love that you give back to me that so many people feel that I'm doing so much for them. And it's like, geez, you have no idea what you're doing for me. No idea. I love my sponsees. I show up for them. I open up the big book. I don't want to change the words of these programs. I've taken it literal. I don't need to revise it or change it. I don't make up my own words. I use the ones that are in the book. I'm a copycat. I do. I repeat it all the time. People always say, oh, big book thumpers, quotes all the time. I don't know another language. I'm sorry. Why make up some new words? They seem to work. They just do. That's why I love this program. It's that simple. I don't have to be a genius. My sponsors are going through something. Okay, let's look at this page right here. We could do this. I don't have to know anything. It's a simple program for complicated people. And every time I take them through the steps and every time I take them through the book, I'm taking me through that process too. And I'm just shocked and amazed and I learned something new. And some of my sponsees is hysterical because when I go through it with them, I'm like, did you hear that? Wow, that's intense. Did you get that? And they're like, okay, Teresa. Get a little excited. I'm like, this program works. It works. Do you see it? Did you hear it? And then I get to see them blossom and I get to see these flowers grow and they're just so beautiful, these women, and they're in gratitude of me, but it's just because I just showed up and I just did what you told me to do. And I tell them it's because they found a God in their life. And God gets to use me to carry the message. And that is the joy, is to see their life change, to see them get reunited with their families. And I've been in situations where some people didn't get it. And they choose to go back out and be in pain. I've seen people in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous in pain because they don't want a clean house. But I get to love you anyway. That's what you taught me. I came into Alcoholics Anonymous to learn from you. I learned what I want to be like and what I don't want to be like. Both are significant. And I don't hold you accountable at any level. I've learned not to judge you because of that. I just love you for teaching me. Thank you for being my teacher. I get to be humble. I get to be teachable. I get to be honest, open-minded, and willing. I get to come in here and disrobe and tell you my truth, and you love me anyway. And I get to listen to you and love you anyway. And this is the joy of helping others. When people recover and rooms get bigger and bigger and they grow and it's all over the world. That within itself is so joyful because not only are we recovered is how I look at it, I'm just picturing how many families are healing as a result of that. In the millions. And that's huge. And so, I guess for me, my experience of the joy of helping others is the gratitude that I receive that I continue to have hope again in my life. I get to continue to recognize that it is but a daily reprieve. But for the grace of God, that this is a precious, precious gift that's been given to me. And I don't ever want to take it for granted. And the only way not to do that is to continue to give back what was so freely given to me. And to suit up and show up and sit in those meetings to let a newcomer know that this program works. And as I continue to do that, I get to stay sober too. And that is just enough that I am sober today. That's huge. And so thank you so much, each and every one of you, for loving me. And I really, really mean that. You guys love me so much. And yes, I share with you everything that I have. And in return, you just continue to love me. And I just want to thank you, each and every one of you, for being here and supporting me. And I always continue to ask that I stay teachable, humble, willing, and honest. Thank you.
Geez, couldn't they get a little more enthusiastic? Could we thank Kevin and Teresa one more time? Thank you. When I received my loving invitation to do this meeting, there was a suggestion that I might like to share some of my experience, strength, and hope in between the three speakers. But unfortunately, I come from North Vancouver, British Columbia, and or I did. I've moved since, and I moved last year. But in any case, that's where I grew up. In AA, and one of my mentors is here, and he reminded me, as he always likes to do in his gentle fashion, that chair people chair and speakers speak. I knew I was going to have difficulty complying with that kind of those kinds of instructions in the first place, and to have him here has certainly changed that. We're just going to end early. You're going to have an extra. You want more, Teresa? You make sure you catch her at the end of the meeting. And it's been my privilege and my honor to have been able to chair this meeting and to share with you the experience of sobriety at the International Convention in Toronto. And I want to thank the committee for having chosen me. And where I come from, we close our meetings with the Serenity Prayer, and I think that's appropriate this morning. If you'll join hands and close with the Serenity Prayer.